Hey, what's up, flies? This is David Spade.
Dana Carvey.
Look, I know we never actually left, but I'll just say it. We are back with another season of Fly on the Wall.
Every episode, including ones with guests, will now be on video. Every Thursday, you'll hear us and see us chatting with big-name celebrities.
And every Monday, you're stuck with just me and Dana. We react to news, what's trending, viral clips.
Follow and listen to Fly on the Wall everywhere you get your podcasts.
We're back, live with more Gabe Ramirez on 670 The Score.
There's your newest superstar in the coaching ranks right there. Everybody seems to want one of those young coaches that can last many, many years as your head coach. Guess what, Seattle? You found one.
And there he is, the 36-year-old McVay. And Tomlin won the Super Bowl. And he'll become the third youngest head coach to win a Super Bowl. Trevion Henderson trying to get to the sideline. Keeps going to the 29. And that will do it. Seattle reigns above them all in the NFL. The Seahawks, Super Bowl champions for the second time.
You heard Mike Tirico right there on the call. The Seattle Seahawks defeat the New England Patriots 29-13 on what some would call one of the most boring Super Bowls ever. The game, that is. It's Gabe Ramirez hanging out with you on 104.3 The Score. Live and local all the way till 5 o'clock, handing you off to Dustin Rhodes. That is when, of course, you will get set up for Mully and Hall, who have a great show for you lined up today. They will have Stacey Dales on at some point. So you want to listen to great stuff. Stacey Dales is one of my favorite people to listen to on Mully and Hall. She gets it. She's a former athlete, so she understands it from an analyst perspective, but also in the athlete's perspective. They'll have Ross Tucker at 7 o'clock. Ola Cruz will jump on at 9. So make sure you're hanging out with the guys, Mully and Hall. And then, I might as well throw it in, tonight, 5:30 is what we're going to be on today. David Hall, which I'm going to give him crap. You know, David Hall, obviously one of the more hardest working dudes in media. You know, everybody's like, oh, David, how do you do it? How do you do it, David? How do you do the morning show and then come on TV at night? Well, who the hell is asking me how I did the overnight show and then work a little bit later tonight? But that's exactly what happened. Tonight, the Chicago lead, myself, David Hall, Ruthie Polinsky, 5:30 on CHSN. Make sure you check that out. And then, of course, I believe it's 7 to 9, Mully and Hall simulcast on CHSN. So you got to check that out. You don't even got to leave your house or turn into the radio to get that opportunity to do just that. All right, we're talking about the Super Bowl was, again, as mentioned, extremely boring in the very beginning. 9-0 at the end of the first half, 12-0 at the end of three, just field goals galore. But there were some takeaways, and that's what I've been asking people today is just, you know, what do you feel like the gap was when you were watching that game, right, between the Chicago Bears and both the Seattle Seahawks and the New England Patriots? For me, it was cornerback play. Now, obviously, both teams able to get pressure not only up the middle but on the edges. Drake May, you know, just whenever you felt like you were looking up, he was getting sacked. 6 sacks on the day for 43 yards. And so they were getting pressure there, but to me it was the cornerbacks. Like, it's one thing to create pressure, but both of these quarterbacks were extremely accurate. Like, you saw Drake May, Sam Darnold, fitting it through windows, really getting it there. But it was the cornerback play for me that really stood out and made the big difference, right? When you're talking about Christian Gonzalez, when you're talking about Jones, Davis, I mean, these guys were flying all over the place. And that was for the losing team, right? Then obviously, the Seattle Seahawks, I mean, what a difference. I mean, the team, it's crazy because you have an understated defense where obviously people knew they were good all year long. But if you didn't see it up close and personal on a week in and week out basis, you can't properly understand it, right? This is a team that, you know, brings in the wily veteran and DeMarcus Lawrence. Then, of course, they got the Illinois boy, Devon Witherspoon. Just, you know, and he was Kyler. he was Kyler Gordon on the outside, right?
He looked like every play he was blitzing right up between the tackles and guards.
It's like they couldn't stop him, and they were disguising it well. And, you know, what maybe it was they saw something on tape where they were able to blitz from Sam Darnold's blind side, and so they were able to find something there, or you're exploiting the two rookie offensive linemen for the Patriots. But, again, this is one that, to me, that was the biggest difference. That's where it stood out. Could the Bears score as many points? Probably. But the over-under distance was 45.5, which barely fell short. But you would assume that the offenses could compete, but the biggest difference is just on the defensive side of the ball. I mean, that's what you saw there. And then I feel like people weren't in on this game. I don't know what it was. Maybe it was just me and my people were just ready for Bad Bunny. But I don't know. When you looked at this game, I don't know. I felt like it was two boring teams. The way I explained it to my wife was, I said, babe, if these two teams were playing on a Sunday and there was a TV playing every game and it was a regular Sunday and these two teams were playing, this wouldn't be the most watched game. That's how I was trying to put in perspective, like how boring this game is. And then my wife proceeded to tell me, she's like, you know, the only thing I know about the Seahawks is Russell Wilson, and the only thing I know about the Patriots is Tom Brady. So to me, this just looks like two teams that I know nothing about. Like, she's even from like a regular person's perspective. I didn't even think about it from that angle. I'm more so thinking about it like, you know, Stacey Dales, who, as I mentioned earlier, will be on with Mully and Hall later. David Haw, or, you know, the guys asked her who's going to be the best player on the field. And she struggled to answer the question. Because she's like, I don't know. Turns out it was Kenneth Walker who ended up winning the MVP after rushing for over 100 and some yards. Should have been the kicker. Like, well, I was trying to think of the caller's name that called in and suggested it, but I couldn't recall it well enough. But Jason Myers from the Seahawks, he should have been the MVP. 12-0. The game's in hand. Your defense is playing. I thought they were going to shut him out at one point.
I thought it was going to be Nwosu, honestly.
No what?
Nwosu, the guy who got the pick six.
Yeah. That's coming a little later in the game, right? Because then you're...
Yeah, but the Super Bowl they won previously, Malcolm Smith won MVP when he got a pick six, so...
Yeah. For me, I think about it and I'm like, well if it's 12-0, you're two scores down, now you're forced to throw. So the pick six comes as a result of the good defense and obviously the look at me trying to make a case for Jason Myers MVP.
You remember in 2009 Tracy Porter? They were up by a couple scores and he still took it back and everybody remembers him because of that. That like sealed the game there for the Saints.
I'm sure if I looked at his stat line, there were other things there that would have contributed to that.
Who, Tracy Porter or
Tracy Porter?
I'll look it up, but I don't think he was having that.
Yeah, let's look at this.
Let's look it up. Let's go back in the time machine.
I'm here for the discussion on, because listen, is there a little saltiness from Sam Darnold that, you know, because it's still another thing you can say. You're like, yeah, you took your team to the Super Bowl, but you didn't even win MVP. But your defense held them to, you know what I'm saying? Like, so Sam Darnold gets slighted a little bit. I feel bad for him still.
All right, so Tracy Porter had four tackles, one pass breakup, and then obviously the pick six.
Okay, so not a crazy stat line.
Not a crazy stat line, but obviously, like, he didn't win MVP, but, like, everybody remembers. If there's a play to remember from that game besides the onside kick, the surprise onside is Tracy Porter's pick six. Yeah,
that's the one. I mean, listen, boring Super Bowl. Boring Super Bowl.
I mean, it was a dominant Super Bowl by the Seahawks.
You know what? I envy Seahawks fans because I know if it were me, I'd want a boring Super Bowl. If it were the Bears, you know, I don't want it to come down to the wire.
Well, really, after this season, you want a boring Super Bowl after everything that's been happening for the Bears this season?
That's exactly what I want.
Because you don't want another heart attack.
I don't want a heart attack. I would love a just... Wow, this is a boring game. Bears are up 21-0, 24-0. It's like, or 24-10 or whatever it is. Like, game's in hand. And then you're just sipping on some brews. That would be a great Super Bowl. I do not want the heartbreak. Listen, is the Tom Brady victory over the Atlanta Falcons with the comeback, is that probably when, like, when you're thinking about fan bases and moments that will live forever? Yes. So I get that. But I don't want to live through that. I'd rather not. And especially because the possibility of losing is still on the table. I would rather not have that.
What do you think was harder, that Super Bowl or the Giants trying to upset the Patriots in 07?
Right. See?
Because that one, as a Giants fan, I feel like you had to go through everything in that Super Bowl.
Okay. I bet you if you asked a Patriots fan, they would say that the thrill of victory outweighed the agony of that defeat.
Maybe. But like the agony of defeat sticks with you longer.
It always.
Yes. Always.
But except when you come back from down 28 and you win a Super Bowl.
Yeah. You're down 25 points and you come back and win. Yeah.
Yeah.
That's pretty special.
That's what I'm saying. So I think the thrill of that victory, if you ask them, they're like, yeah, you know what? That hurt. But this one, when I was in my basement crying, thinking that I had already lost, and then they came back and I slapped my dog and the whatever, you know what I'm saying? Like,
okay, how about in 17 when they had that back and forth with Philadelphia, most total yards in Super Bowl history, and Brady set a record for passing yards in that game?
That was just a game.
That was a crazy game. It's a
crazy game, but we've been there. I mean, we think about our feelings when the Bears came back against the Packers and then ended up winning in overtime. Like, they had to come back with the onside. Then, like, that was amazing.
Yes.
And so, but take that in a Super Bowl? Oh, my God. Like that game is going to live forever, and it's a regular season game. You know what I'm saying? Imagine being now 25 and then coming back and winning the Super Bowl. You could never win a Super Bowl again in my lifetime, and I'd be okay.
I'll ask you. Because, like, in that game in Week 16, there were so many miscues by the Packers. And then, obviously, in the wild card game as well, sure, there's probably so many miscues by the Packers. That's the biggest game of the year. And you try to minimize those mistakes as much as possible. And you don't see that many mistakes like that, like the Falcons did in 16. Does that happen for the Bears in the Super Bowl? Because, like, everything had to go right for them and everything had to go wrong for the Packers in those two games for the Bears to win.
Yeah, I mean, now we're... You know, theory. We are doing a theory about the theory.
I know. I'm just saying. Yeah.
Yeah. Would everything have to go right for them, or would everything go right in a situation like that if they were to have to come back in a Super Bowl that they were made? Yes, because it's our theory in our brains, and so we get to decide what we want. But I think it would just be if the Bears had to. If there is a team or was a team that you'd have to pick from this season who would be capable of doing it, it would be the Chicago Bears.
Of coming back like that crazy amount?
Coming back that crazy amount. The only thing is it just probably wouldn't happen because I don't know if Caleb would be able to put up that many points. Or the defense would be able to stop him, you know, to get to that point.
Especially against, you know, Patriots defense didn't look too good against the Seahawks offense, but at the same time, the Seahawks defense, I don't know if the Bears are putting that on them. So
yeah. But that, again, it goes back to what I was saying earlier, which is, you know, we as Bears fans have to really look at these teams. And I'm not talking about the fan that's in you that defends this team no matter what. It's the critical one, right? The one that looks at the squad and says, okay, I can put my fan feelings to the side and I can figure out where the gaps are between a team like the Seattle Seahawks and a team like the Chicago Bears. Now, if you're going position group by position group, would you, and you can text, I see texters coming in again about Caleb Williams, would you say that Caleb is better than Sam Darnold? You'd want to make the case that he will be, but is he in the present? Then you're looking at the running back situation. Do you like a Kyle Manungai and a DeAndre Swift better than a Kenneth Walker and a Zach Charbonnet? The wide receiver group, right? When you're looking at JSN, you want that to be, desperately want that to be a DJ Moore or a, you know, Luther Burden III. But who's going to, you know, who are the rest of those players? You also need a Cooper Kupp. You know, you got a better tight end. You know that. Probably, I don't know, let's say the wide receiver rooms are similar. Then when you go to the defensive side of the ball, I mean, that's really where it makes and breaks. And that's what led me to the conversation about who should be cap casualties. Now, Tremaine Edmonds is somebody who I've mentioned because he's due over $17 million. And he'll only count $2.9 million towards the cap if they cut him. Now, you got to remember, Tremaine Edmonds, he's a Matt Eberflus guy. He's not a Dennis Allen or a Ben Johnson guy. And so I remember clearly Matt Eberflus had the defense for 1 year, and then that next offseason, Ryan Poles gave him Tremaine Edmonds because that's the one he wanted. He wanted a lengthier guy, someone that can cover the field and the defense that they were looking to play, that base cover too. And so when you're looking at it now, you're like, damn, save $15 million? Yes. Yes, I would love to save $15 million on a Tremaine Edmonds. I think when you're looking at Cole Kmet and his money, you thought Cole Kmet was going to, and I know Roz called me out on it earlier. It's like, I'm not trying to talk about Cole Kmet, but I'm talking about people that make Cole Kmet dollars versus people that don't make Cole Kmet dollars. And I think that Cole Kmet right now is $11.6 million cap hit. The dead cap is 1.6. So you'll save $10 million. Go to Spot Rack. Actually, that's exactly what I'm going to go do. If you go to Spot Rack and look at the free agents that are out there right now, free agent tight ends, you can find a comparable guy to Cole Kmet and I haven't even clicked on it yet, for half the money, guaranteed. Like $10 million, you know, this is your top three tight ends that are hitting free agency this year. Travis Kelce, obviously 36. Nobody's going to pay him that much money. But David Njoku, who's 29, he made $13 million. Dallas Goedert made $10 million last year. These are the guys that are hitting free agents. But here are the people below them, right? And this is why I say if you want to save the $10 million, because you can spread it out other places. You like a Tyler Higbee?
He probably wants to get paid, though.
Maybe. He made it an 8.5 last year. He's 33 years old. I can't imagine who's going to give him a big contract. I can't imagine it. Not going to give him 11.6. Can I interest you in a Kyle Pitts?
Mm-mm.
Made 8.2 last year. He's only 25.
Mm-mm.
Exactly. Austin Hooper, obviously one of Drake May's favorite targets. You know how much he made? $5 million. So, again, I'm trying to put it in perspective. Again, it has nothing to do with Cole Kmet. It's Cole Kmet dollars versus a different tight end's dollars and then what you could save. So, you know, there's some guys in there. Oh, you need a blocking tight end? How about a Tyler Conklin? Can I interest you in a blocking tight end for $3
million? Maybe, but I got an idea for you.
Okay, I like ideas.
Okay, if you're going to cap casualty in the tight end room, there's a free agent coming out of Baltimore that's pretty good pass catcher, okay blocker. Did have some interesting drops late in the season that probably led to him not being re-signed by the Ravens. That's Isaiah Likely. He would do pretty well in a Ben Johnson offense.
He would do well. It's a great call. He's more of your Colston Loveland type tight end than he is a Cole Kmet guy.
No, he can spread. He can go down the field on the outside, and he can underneath.
That's what I'm saying. He's more of your Colston Loveland. He's your pass catching. He's more of your pass catching guy than because they call Cole Kmet their bruising guy that can catch, and I think Isaiah Likely is more of a catcher that can block.
Yeah. Likely's I like it, more though. Finesse guy.
I'm gonna be very clear.
You like it? I know you like it.
I like anything that's less than $11.6 million.
Ooh, I don't know. He'll ask for the price though.
He's not gonna get $11 million. That's what I'm trying to say. The tight end market is not gonna be as bustling as it once was. So I think these guys are not gonna be making as much. Can I interest you in And Adam Trautman from Denver, $3.7 million. Noah Fant, 28 years old, $2.7 million. Those kinds of guys that you can just get, they can be bodies for you and maybe catch a pass here and there. There's a lot of names on here. Noah Fant, I mean, talking about Seattle, no, former Seattle guy, these years in the league. Again, cap casualties. More money that's out there for you. I talked about the Tremaine Edmonds one. He's a 2026 cap hit of 17.4 and a dead cap of $2.4 million, so you're saving $15 million. So just cutting Tremaine and Cole Kmet, I can get you $25 million.
He was playing linebacker, though. TJ Edwards is still hurt.
Exactly. You know what I got?
Ruben Hippolyte?
Nope. You know what I got? The 25th pick in the draft.
Okay.
And I can get a damn good linebacker with the 25th pick in the draft.
I haven't seen the class. I'll have to look it up.
Even if I got the fourth best linebacker. and I pay him pennies on the dollar compared to Tremaine Edmonds. I am getting a 25th pick, first round linebacker. I am getting Noah Fant, and I still have $17 million probably to go give an offensive lineman because I'm going to need a left tackle. Right? You got Ozzie Chirillo knee cap is somewhere. So they're still looking for it, and so you got Braxton Jones as a free agent. You know, situations like that you need the money for. I hear some other people that are out there. You mentioned T.J. Edwards. Okay, he got hurt.
Yeah, you don't know if he's going to be back for the start of the season. He might be on the pup list.
Might be on the pup list. But if you cut him, you save $8.5 million.
I don't know if they want to cut T.J. though.
Why not? Are you gonna pay him after? Now I want to be very clear. I think T.J. is the more valuable of the two. I think we saw it throughout the season when guys like Ruben Hippolyte, Noah Sewell stepped in. You saw the drop off in linebacker play, and then when T.J. was in there, you're like, oh, this is a real linebacker. So I felt like he is more valuable. But if he's hurt, you're not gonna re-sign him anyway. Save the $8 million. Now instead of 25, I got you $33 million. Now, granted, you have to redo all of your linebacking core, so that is a problem in itself. But you got $33 million to do it and draft picks. So again, you have to save money there. Now, there's a couple other names on here that I tried to shy away from, and this is something again that we talked about on the Chicago Lead. Montez Sweat is a guy where you can save $7 million. Probably wouldn't want to do it because you'd be back in the situation that you're in without a pass rush up the front. Jalen Johnson. He's making $24 million. If you cut him, you can save $15.5 million. Now, I just talked about how the difference between Seattle, New England, and the Bears, to me, the bigger glaring gap was that of the cornerbacks, where I think Jalen Johnson is really good. I think Tyrique Stevenson and Nashon Wright are good. I love Jaquan Brisker and Kevin Byard, but that unit was not as good as, and I think they're very good, and still they were not as good as the two teams that were in the Super Bowl. But Jalen Johnson, $24 million cap hit. He'd be a dead cap hit with $9 million, so you'd save $15.5 million. But you got to keep him there for the same reasons you're keeping Montez Sweat in that situation. Last one I got for you is DeAndre Swift. Cap hit of $8.8 million. He'd only be a dead cap hit of $1.3 million, so it'd save you about $7.5 million. So I can get you to $40 million. But then you'd have no linebackers. You'd have no running back.
No linebackers, no running back.
one less tight end.
A lot of free agents in the secondary.
You got a lot of money. You got a lot of money, though. You got a lot of money. And I think that's the important part. But I think the two for me, I think you keep DeAndre Swift because, listen, I like Kyle Manung guy, but you still need an adult in the room. And I think DeAndre Swift is that. And you saw Ben Johnson was able to really get the most out of him towards the tail end of the season. I think if you got that extra year left on the contract, just go ahead and handle that. Maybe get a young bull in there to kind of make a three-headed monster. You never know, second round pick, something like that. But so I think you got to cut Tremaine. You got to cut Cole Kmet. I'm surprised people aren't going crazy on the text lines right now. Somebody did say that was the worst Super Bowl since the Seahawks beat the Broncos. Since the last season.
No, Rams and Patriots in 18 was awful.
Rams, Patriots, that one
13-3.
Yeah, that one was a, I mean, Super Bowls, you're right. They're few and far between where they're great ones, but I mean, this one was boring. But Benito was great on the other side. Anyways, let me not sidetrack her there. All right, so what I want you to do is this. You can feel free to text in right now. Phone lines are open. You can call in as well. You heard some of those names that were there. Tremaine Edmonds, Cole Kmet, DeAndre Swift, T.J. Edwards, Jalen Johnson, and Montez Sweat. Who are you comfortable moving on from of those guys that are there? Because you might say to yourself, "Nah, Gabe, Colston Loveland and Cole Kmet, they got something going there. I don't want to get rid of them." So maybe you might disagree with it on that side. But of those six names, who do you want to stick with? And who would you be comfortable moving on from? All right, 312-644-6767. Going to take your calls on the other side, and then we'll give you some more information about what happened on the Super Bowl. It's Gabe Ramirez hanging out with you overnight. Don't go anywhere. You're listening to 104.3 The Score.
History That Doesn't Suck is a legit, hard-hitting American history podcast told through entertaining stories. As we approach America's 250th anniversary, now might be the time to go back and learn how we got here. With more than 200 episodes, you can binge your way, decade by decade, defining event to defining event, from the founding into the 20th century. Join me, Professor Greg Jackson, for History That Doesn't Suck, an Odyssey podcast, available on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.
We're back, live with more Gabe Ramirez on 670 The Score.
The fake, Williams, looking downfield, launching downfield, going for it all! It is caught! Bears win it! DJ Moore!
Shout out Fox for that wonderful highlight that will live forever. DJ Moore getting into the end zone. And the reason I bring him up is because, you know, we were talking about cap casualties a second ago. And somebody texted me, one of my homies. He's like, don't forget about DJ Moore, which is petty because he knows how much I like DJ Moore. Don't forget that with DJ Moore, there is a, if you trade him pre-June 1st, leaving $12 million dead money, $16 million in savings in 2026, which would be insane. Because I think that when we're talking to Ryan Poles at the tail end and asking DJ Moore and his obviously role on the team moving forward, it didn't sound convincing. We didn't know if DJ Moore was going to be back. So he might be another one. Saving 15, $16 million? So what did we get up to? 43? So that's 59? Damn. 59, but then you wouldn't have a receiver. You wouldn't have a tight end. You wouldn't have any linebackers. And you lose your running back as well. But, again, there's just so many moves for the Bears to make. It'll be interesting to see what they value, right? What Ben Johnson is going to be playing a big role there. He obviously knows where the shortcomings were on his team. And maybe he thinks that $15 million could be spread to make him better somewhere else or better overall. But I think that they definitely evaluated the squad and understand, you know, that there has to be upgrades. And maybe the linebacker positions is where those need to happen. And so it's not just Tremaine Edmonds and saving the $15 million with him as a cut, but it's also the T.J. Edwards who's, you know, dealing with the injury as well. But big stuff, because the goal ultimately is to get to the Super Bowl. And the goal ultimately is to, man, I wish the Bears would have made it this year. I was going to say to get to the Super Bowl where Bad Bunny's performing. Because so my dad, I convinced him in San Francisco. I said, if the Bears make it to the Super Bowl, I was like, you know, Bad Bunny's performing, right, Pops? I'm like, we got to go to this. And he's like, oh, man, if the Bears go to the Super Bowl, I'm definitely buying you guys tickets. Me and my brother were there. It was all us three and a bunch of other friends and family that were with us on this trip to go watch the Bears play the Niners this year. And he's like, if the Bears go to the Super Bowl, I'm definitely buying tickets. And I'm like, oh my God, this is going to be crazy. Bears in the Super Bowl with Bad Bunny? But Bears didn't play, but Bad Bunny's performance was incredible, right? I think, as I mentioned before, you know, the halftime shows, they're usually background noise for a lot of people. But tonight, I didn't feel like it was that. So yeah, I felt like, you know, most people were like, oh, Bad Bunny, you know, just did a halftime show. Think about that. He just did the halftime show fully in Spanish. Sang the whole thing. God bless America was probably like one of the fewer words he said in English. And that's not a small feat, right? Some people like myself watched the show and felt extremely proud. I can't even stress how proud I was to watch it. And it was almost like a timid proud where most people were like, yeah, you know, Puerto Rico tan cabrón, it's crazy. And I was just more like, I cannot believe this is happening. I cannot believe Bad Bunny's out here with people dressed as trees and bushes and he's out here performing these songs. And I understand that some people felt the opposite. Some people felt like this isn't for me. And some people didn't watch the game at all, but tuned in specifically for Bad Bunny, the Benito Bowl, as a lot of people were calling it. Check out Romova Theater and what those pictures looked like last night when the Bears crew stepped in and threw Benito Bowl over there. It was packed, sold out Romova Theater to watch the halftime show. If you were at Arbella in downtown Chicago who, after the halftime show, and I know this because my friends were bartending over there, after the halftime show, they turned off the game. And then the DJ started playing, right? So there's different people feeling different things. And I'm not here to tell you what you're supposed to feel, but the question that matters for me, right, is what is the halftime show supposed to be? It's supposed to represent the whole country, or is it supposed to chase the biggest global moment possible, right? Because when they've had other people there, you know, representing for the globe, it felt right, you know? Or is it just supposed to be fun and a lot of people are just taking it too seriously? Because one thing I can say without a doubt is that if you watched it, you saw a party in the form of a performance. And for those of us that saw Bad Bunny's show in Puerto Rico, whether you saw it live or you saw it on Amazon, it was so impressive to see Bad Bunny condense his, I think it's like a four-hour show. It's like a four-hour show that he did to condense it down into whatever minutes it was, 10 or 15 minutes. And still have the same impact and effect there. So, you know, so did the halftime show enhance your night or did it distract you from the game? Or was it the game for you? And if you hated it, I would love for somebody to just call that didn't like it. You know, I have no problem with that. I have no problem hearing why. Don't feel like we're going to get into some spat. There's nothing wrong with that. But the phone lines are open. And I am here for opinions on Bad Bunny's halftime show. Because, I took notes on some commercials.
Yeah, we never talked about commercials.
I know. I took some notes in some commercials because I felt like, you know, the passion behind the commercials has waned over the last decade. But I felt like they had some good ones. So do you know who Cat's Eye is?
No.
That's good. See, I wrote that down for a reason.
But now I do.
Well, I haven't told you who they are yet, so.
Oh, no, I'm just from the commercials.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
So State Farm did a commercial where they had a bunch of people, and then Cat's Eye was in there, and that's like a girl group that's out of nowhere. But I'm thinking to myself, they have all these random people in this commercial, and no one knows that this is Cat's Eye. That's all I was thinking when I was watching it. I'm like, nobody knows. They're just an afterthought. People have no idea who this is right now. But it was a good State Farm commercial. DraftKings did the SNL bit with Tay and the other guy who's married to the... Wow, this is terrible. To the hot wife. Who's Tay? Tay is one of the dudes... And then his...
Oh, Michael Che and...
Michael Che and then... See, you didn't remember his name either. I like it. All right, good. That makes me feel better. Scarlett Johansson. I know his wife, though. Scarlett Johansson.
Colin Jost.
So they had the DraftKings one that was... had, like, voiceovers. I thought that was pretty funny. Toyota had a good one where it was... I tried to explain it to my kids, and they couldn't grasp the concept. I was like, these are younger people... talking to their older selves, and she didn't get it. My four-year-old was like, what do you mean? I was like, it's like you talking to your older you. Older you. Try to explain older you to a four-year-old. Not good. Puka Nakua was there. They had some guys in there. That was great. T-Mobile had the Backstreet Boys, which, you know, you can't go wrong with a Backstreet Boy. And I love the joke that they played at the end, which was they had MGK. Come on at the very end. Thank you, Grant. MGK, come on at the very end. And nobody's there for him. And he's like, all right, damn, I'll just sing the Backstreet Boys song. That was great. I thought that was a funny one. Rocket Mortgage had one that tugged at the heartstrings. And it was about being a neighbor, which I thought was good. Like, it went back to, you know, American values and how life used to be where you had a neighborhood and neighbors. And it's like life like that. So I thought they tapped into that. Rocket Mortgage did a great job. Goodwill Duncan. Did you see that one, Grant?
Yeah, I was going to mention that to you if you didn't mention that one. Goodwill Duncan. That was probably my favorite.
Yeah, they had all the nostalgic characters kind of sliding in there, and they did like a bit. So who were some of the people? They had Jaleel White.
They had
Urkel.
Yeah, Urkel. They had Matt LeBlanc.
Matt LeBlanc.
For Joey from Friends.
Yeah. They had Ben Affleck.
Ben Affleck, who was supposed to be... he was being Goodwill Hunting in the commercial. And then they had Jennifer Aniston on
Jennifer Aniston was
and
in
she did the bit about with good. The window and the...
How you like them apples.
How you like them apples, yeah.
That was good. That was good.
I can't forget the other one that's in that.
George Costanza, was he in there?
Yes, he was, but like... come on.
Yeah.
It was a famous cameo. He was in there for like 2 seconds.
Ted Danza?
No.
Tony Danza?
No.
I don't know.
Tom Brady.
Oh, yeah.
How do you forget about Tom Brady being in the commercial?
Because there were so many people. I was like, oh, my gosh. All right, like that one. All right, here are my two favorite ones out of anything. So the Raisin Bran commercial with William Shatner. Did you see that one?
Yeah, that was just weird.
Will Shatner, that's so funny. He's like, what's up with your boy Will Shatner? And I'm thinking, why are they calling him that? And then when the commercial went on, it's like, I don't even know if I can say this on the radio. It's just so funny.
Just be careful.
They're like, it's Will on the car. Will crap on the car. We can say that. Let's call it right. Will crap on the car. It's like, Will crap over here. I thought that was funny. Very, very clever. I thought that was great. But my favorite one out of all of them, and it's probably not anyone else's favorite, but it was Instacart, and it was with Ben Stiller and Benson Boone. And for those of you that don't know Benson Boone, he's kind of like would be the equivalent of Freddie Mercury from Queen.
Yeah.
Modern day Freddie Mercury. Yeah. A little wild, but got a great voice. A lot of people love him. And... you know, he had this bit where he was like doing flips, and then Ben Stiller comes out, and it was like he looked like the guy from Dodgeball, his character from Dodgeball. And so that was my favorite one. But you know, people don't talk about commercials like they do, because now you can just watch them ahead of time. It's not the same. It's not the same. So people are tapped in for this one. People are specifically tapped into the halftime show, like I was, which I thought was excellent, by the way. And then to the game, like I said, David Hall texts me in the middle of the thing. And I would like to think that he texts me because we're friends and not because I'm Puerto Rican. And he just felt like he needed to tap in with like the one Puerto Rican homie that he had. But David Hall texts me and he's like, was that as good as I think it was? Wow. And that just goes to let you know, you know, a lot of people felt the same way. It was, if you take out all the political stuff, it was just a good, fun performance. And I think that, to me, was the bigger takeaway.
And there wasn't that much political stuff in it either, too.
Yeah. So. I mean, he did a good job of making it about the music. And I think you did a good job of saying that, Grant, earlier today when we were discussing it off the air. But it was a good one, man. Seahawks take down the New England Patriots 29-13 in a game that most Bears fans, like myself, watched it with disgust. Because you just... I mean, I've been bad at my job on TV because I've been trying to stay away from football as much as possible. Like, we'll talk. David and I did a bit, like, you know, breaking down, like, biggest mismatches and breaking down the games. And I was just like, I got to be honest, guys, I am so hurt still that I cannot tap into my NFL bones because I'm not there yet still, which is weird. But everybody grieves differently, you know? Everybody grieves differently. You might have been over it, but the game was just boring. First three quarters, 12-0. But you were able to see a lot of things that stood out, right? Again, I mentioned the defense consistently because that's certainly what stood out. But on the offensive side, you know, when you're looking at quarterback play and when you're thinking what tier Caleb Williams is in and which one he falls in, and, you know, when you're talking about Super Bowl quarterbacks, because that's what these two are, you know, Drake May looked like the moment was... not that it was too big for him, but the moment was big. And maybe he wasn't ready yet to be there. Sam Darnold looked like he was a man that was trying to prove something, even though New England's defense was great. But Drake May on the day was 27 for 43. He had 295, bulk of that coming in the second half, two touchdowns, both of those coming in the fourth quarter, two interceptions, got sacked six times on the day. That Seattle defense was just relentless. They would not stop. On the ground, Drake May had five rushes for 37 yards, had the fumble, crucial one right there. Rhamondre Stevenson, the late season waiver wire addition that most people, over the years, that's what he's been. 7 rushes for 23 yards on Travion Henderson, 6 rushes for 19 yards. Not a lot of productivity from that rushing game. Really couldn't get established. They tried in the first half. I mean, Vrabel was adamant. They were trying to get that thing started, but unfortunately, the defense was just too staunch and couldn't get anything going. When it comes to receivers of the Patriots, Mac Hollins, 4 catches, 78 yards, and the touchdown in the second half. Demario Douglas, 4 catches, 54 yards. I mean, it's just rough. Stephon Diggs, 3 catches for 37. Hunter Henry, 3 for 31. You know, when you don't have many weapons like that, like the Patriots, you know, you can, it's easy for defenses to hone in on certain people, right? We're not going to let Stephon Diggs, even though he had the 27-yard catch, just that one, so we're not going to let him beat us throughout the night. 3 targets on the day. Hunter Henry, we know he wants to go to him and Austin Hooper. Those are his outlets. The 2 of them, 5 catches for 41 yards. I mean, just an excellent job by the defense focusing in on the focal points for the Patriots and really just minimizing them and disrupting it. It's a great job. Defensively, only 1 sack on the day for the Patriots, but they did have 7 pass deflections. So they were out there. Like I said, the cornerback play was great by both teams in the Super Bowl. Seahawks on the day, Sam Darnold, 19 for 38, 202 yards. Just, I mean... You think you need like some 300-yard performance with 3 touchdowns in the Super Bowl. Not quite. Sam Darnold managing the game. No interceptions. 1 sack on the day. And it's easy to do that when you can lean on your rushing game. Kenneth Walker III, 27 rushes, 135 yards. Helani, 2 rushes for 6 yards. One of my boys picked him up. Again, weird fantasy football thing. But he was like, if Kenneth Walker gets hurt, you never know. Yes, he was a workhorse, my friend. Cooper Kupp, 6 catches, 61 yards. A.J. Barner, 4 catches, 54 yards. He 2 catches for 27. Jackson Smith and Jigba, 4 catches on 10 targets, though. They did not shy away from trying to get him the ball, especially early. Had an opportunity to get a touchdown in the first quarter. Sam Darnold, evading a sack, steps up and just couldn't quite connect with him in this one. This is one of those games where... when you're watching it, you're saying to yourself, you just realize how important execution is. And when it was one of those games that were frustrating, especially if you were the Patriots through the first 3 quarters, where you're like, all we got to do is score a touchdown. If we could just score a touchdown, we'll be right back in this game. And it was frustrating because they just could not find a rhythm, could not capitalize on certain moments to be there. And Bears fans, we know how frustrating that can be. First drive of the game, Sam Darnold gets all the way there, no touchdown, just a field goal. And you're saying to yourself, oh, that's very reminiscent of some Bears games where you don't put up 7. And then you get the next field goal and you're like, damn, I've lived this before. If the Patriots are going to score a touchdown right here, I've seen this before. You got to score 7s. And it just never happened, never materialized, which is weird. But good defense, tip your cap. And it just helps, it makes you, it emphasizes the gaps. The gaps between the Seattle Seahawks and that team, right? And the Chicago Bears, where they're at currently. Phone lines are open. Definitely taking them. Gabe Ramirez hanging out with you on 104.3 The Score, leading you right into 5 o'clock. That's when Dustin Rhodes takes over. He's out there crunching numbers right now. Make sure you can get all the latest details on what happened over the weekend. Then, of course, that leads right into Mully and Haw. They got you faded. 7 o'clock in the morning. Ross Tucker jumping on with the guys. Olin Kreutz will hang out at 9. And somewhere in between, you're going to get yourselves a Stacey Dales. Text messages are active. People texting in right now. 630 says, the Super Bowl was a full-blown example of the importance of getting defensive pressure on the QB with your front 4. Hope that's what Ryan Poles took away from the game. And Bad Bunny was great. Great to see Lady Gaga. I didn't even bring up Lady Gaga.
Are you surprised about the minimal guests he had?
No. Okay. No. He wanted to make it about himself. He didn't want to take away too much. But the Gaga thing was just so perfect for so many reasons. And I'll start with the fact that she's just a true bona fide singer. right? You're getting a real vocalist. So he didn't just throw somebody in for fluff to be fluff. It's like, no, I'm going to bring somebody who I actually respect because they have a great voice and they could sing live and it'll be amazing. And then in the most Bad Bunny way ever, he tells Lady Gaga, you could sing this song, but you got to do a salsa rendition of it. I mean, that's just like so, that's so great. You know, when he did the song with Drake, didn't I get to it? Mia, he told Drake, I'll do the song with you, but your verse has to be in Spanish. So he set that out. He set those parameters. He does it often in things like that. So with Lady Gaga, of course, he's not going to make her sing in Spanish. But he did tell her to make her song a salsa song. Now, here's another tidbit for you. Grant, do you know who sings that song with Lady Gaga?
Yeah. You want me to say it?
Yeah.
Bruno Mars.
Bruno Mars. Bruno Mars is Puerto Rican.
Yep.
So for me, I'm watching the halftime show. I see Lady Gaga and I go to my wife and she's like, oh, he's going to bring out Bruno Mars because he's Puerto Rican. And I said, no, he's not. I promise you, he will not bring out Bruno Mars for this thing. And she's like, no way. And sure enough, Bruno Mars will come out. And I'm like, damn. It was like a perfect little touch right there. Then the Ricky Martin bit to me, because the song that Ricky Martin is singing, for those of you that obviously didn't understand the words of that song, it's a very emotional, sentimental song that Ricky Martin was singing. It's on Bad Bunny's latest album. And the chorus, to give you a summation of it, is essentially, I don't want the same thing to happen to Puerto Rico that happened to Hawaii. And so where Hawaii became extremely Americanized and the native people got kicked out because it's so expensive, etc. It's something, you know, that's the summation of it, right? So to have Ricky Martin, who has this like passionate voice, come out. And again, a lot of people, we had callers earlier today. Fabian called in and was like, I thought he was going to have, you know, Daddy Yankee and Tego Calderon, like iconic Puerto Rican reggaeton artists. Instead, he had the only other Puerto Rican artist that he brought out was an icon in Ricky Martin. And I say icon because everybody knows him. So you bring out this icon to sing probably the most sentimental moment in the whole show, outside of him handing the Grammy to, you know, his younger self, so to speak, and to sing in that. So two great moments right there, little cameos by some people. So shout out Bad Bunny for that one. Still buzzing over that one. But I need you to buzz these phone lines because we're going to take some calls on the other side. All right, we're talking about the Super Bowl. Of course, Seattle Seahawks take down the New England Patriots 29-13. You might have caught the game. You might not have. But I'm curious, if you did, what you feel like that gap is between the team that won, the Seattle Seahawks, and the Chicago Bears. A lot of people are saying, as this guy just did on 630, you got to get, you know, more pressure up front. You got to get that front four going. I'd push back and say you got to upgrade your cornerbacks. If you watched the game, that was the biggest takeaway for me. But what was it for you? 312-644-6767. It's Gabe Ramirez hanging out with you, ready to take your phone calls on the other side. So we'll talk to you next right here on 104.3 The Score.
I'm Anna Garcia, host of True Crime News, the podcast. Every week, we bring you in-depth coverage on cases making headlines, as well as those that go under the radar. Tune in for Murders That Defy Explanation, Mystery Seeking Exploration, and Shocking Secrets That Will Leave You Breathless. Each week, we honor the victims by going beyond the salacious in our search for justice. Crime never stops, and neither do we. Listen to True Crime News, available now on the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.